dude in robes with a soup bowl haircut. As they get closer, I focus on each of them to bring up their stats in turn. I start with the redhead. Name, Lady Diana. Level, 85. Class, Praetorian Guard. Then the blonde-haired dude. Name, Sir Thomas. Level, 85. Class, Praetorian Guard. The vet. Name, Sir Siegfried. Level, 85. Class, Praetorian Guard. And finally, the fat guy. Name, Lord Xavier. Level, 85. Class, Executive Officer.
You need not brandish your weapons here, Shard Warrior, the woman, Diana, says.
She has her red hair pulled back in a tight bun, giving her a militaristic demeanor that somehow reminds me of a police officer. Not that we have them back in Citadel, but I've seen enough pre-war action flicks to know a cop when I see one. Just like in the movies, she's attractive and all, but her blue eyes and dour face spell no nonsense. Val Helena seems to gain an air of respect for her as well, because the giantess actually stows her weapon and folds her massive arms across her chest instead. Still imposing, but perhaps a bit less threatening.
"Greetings, travelers," the fat guy says, coming to the front of the pack. "I am Lord Xavier, chief executive officer of this city. His Royal Majesty, King Braxis, has a standing order to welcome any who are from the Shards. But please do tell me your business in Stormwall, so that we may know how to best accommodate you."
"We're on a journey to the Vale of Sorrows," Val Helena says. "We're just looking for some supplies, and then we'll be out of your hair."
"I see."
He goes quiet for a moment, and leans his head to the side, as though listening to a voice we can't hear. I suspect he might be PMing with someone when he nods. He looks back up at us.
"King Braxis has just granted you entrance to the city and free rein within. He also requests the pleasure of your company for a banquet in your honor at the Royal Palace this evening. It is not often he has visitors from home, you see. He has also given you access to the royal baths and guest quarters to rest and refresh yourselves from your journey beforehand."
Whoa. I wasn't expecting all this. The idea of an actual bath and a royal banquet is sounding like heaven right now.
"I will have our royal guard escort you through the city so that you are not bothered by the commoners," Xavier says. "We are having a bit of conflict with the mountain tribes to the north at the moment, and your large friend here might draw some unwanted attention."
"So we heard," Maxis says.
"Lady Diana," Xavier says, turning to the redhead. "I'll leave it to you."
Diana responds by performing a crisp salute, slamming her fist against her silver breastplate while clicking her heels together.
"Yes, my lord."
Xavier smiles at us again, puffing his already full cheeks.
"Please let your escorts know when you are done with your supplies, and they will lead you to the baths. The banquet will commence just after sunset. I bid you farewell."
The chief executive gives us a head nod that resembles a bow, and then sends the six guards back to their posts before leaving us with just the three knights.
"See?" Maxis says with a smug grin. "What did I tell you guys? Nothing to worry about. We're special guests here."
I do feel a bit relieved that I didn't have to tussle with those guards. Maybe he's right. Maybe this King Braxis will be willing to help us, like he said. I look up at Val Helena and give her a questioning look to see how she feels. She gives me back a shrug, but smiles.
"Seems legit. Guess your brother called it right."
"Darn right I did." Maxis grins like an idiot and then gives Val Helena a wink. The giantess lets out a laugh.
"Don't let it go to your head, hot stuff."
But then the two just end up smiling at one another for what seems like half a minute. I get a PM from Gilly. Gilly.
"Ack, they're flirting. I think I'm gonna hurl."
Me.
LOL.
"If you'll follow me,"
Lady Diana says with a wave of her arm, ushering us into the city like VIPs.
"The markets are this way."
We enter the bazaar, and I feel like I'm back in Swifttide again, minus the scent of salt air, of course. It's an open-air market that easily takes up the size of a football field. Around the edges are stores built right into the stone walls, with proper signs and doors. Between them, in the large open space, are row upon row of stalls covered with tent-like roofs. A few thousand people mill in and out between the stalls and the stores, and the faint murmur of barter carries with the wind, along with the scent of wood smoke from braziers set along the perimeter, providing both light and warmth. We decide to split up to make better use of the time, and one of the Praetorian guards joins each of us. Rembrandt heads off with the old dude, Siegfried. Val Helena and Maxis leave with Sir Thomas, and Gilly and I are joined by Lady Diana. "It's getting late, so if you need to purchase something, I suggest you hurry," Diana says once the others depart. "The markets will be closing soon." "Do you know where we can find scrolls of celestial magic?" Gilly asks. Diana bunches her dark brows together in thought. "There is a vendor, yes. But I hope you have coin. They are not cheap. This way." Lady Diana leads the way as we wade through the people in the various stalls. The aroma of open-air kitchens makes my mouth water and my stomach growl. I can't tell what exactly they're cooking, but a lot of it seems to be roasted meat on a stick. Even though that's pretty much all we've been eating for the last few days, I can't seem to get my fill. A lifetime of eating cheap mush from a nanoprocessor has turned me into a super carnivore out here, I guess. I notice various armor and weapons shops as well, but I don't see anything that looks fit for a ninja. I wonder if there's an equivalent of Bangor somewhere out here on the surface. I do see an outfit that catches my eye for Gilly, though. It's a form-fitting white robe with high leggings and a hat that matches her current one. The gear is all level 60 when I give it a quick scan. White witch's hat, plus 15 intelligence, plus 15 mind, plus 20 TP. White witch's coat, minus 10% casting speed, plus 150 TP. White witch's leggings, plus 15 intelligence, plus 15 mind, plus 50 TP. I'd love to get it for her, but we're in a rush now, and the scrolls are probably more important. I make a mental note of where the stall is, though. We continue through the markets, following Diana. She doesn't say much, but I wonder if she might be able to shed some light on the current situation here in the city, especially when it comes to those weird quests. "So, this war that's going on with the North," I say, feeling her out. "How bad is it, Lady Diana?" She slows a bit and looks back at me, her eyes narrow as though she's trying to determine my motives for asking. I swear, if this wasn't a fantasy world, she would definitely be a cop. Diana finally responds with a stiff upper lip. "It's not a war. Not yet, anyway."
"What happened?" Gilly asks.
"A small matter," she says. "You need not concern yourself with it." Cagey, but maybe I can pry the information out. "We only ask because we're headed that way. If we can avoid trouble, we'd appreciate it." This causes her to pause. We come to a complete halt in the middle of the market. "The king heard rumor of the giants gaining strength. When he sent us to investigate, a small skirmish ensued. Again, a small matter, but the king saw fit to break the peace treaty, and now our borders are closed to one another. That is all."
"And what happened with the elves?" Gilly asks.
Her cop eyes narrow again. "I made no mention of elves." Uh-oh. Did Gilly just say too much? I rush to cover for her. "A friend of ours back in Brookrun mentioned the elves to the east were in some kind of conflict with the city as well." Lady Diana shrugs and sets off again. "The borders were closed to all, so it caused a bit of hostility on that front as well." "Sounds like maybe it was a rash decision," I say. Diana doesn't say anything, but she looks at me with those eyes again. Yikes. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. We exit the stalls on the far end of the market and approach one of the stores built into the surrounding walls. "Here it is," Diana says as she points to a door with a sign marked Magics on the front. We head inside and are instantly assaulted with the musty aroma of moth-eaten scrolls. The place is covered with them, shelf upon shelf stuffed full of fading yellow parchment. A chime rings, announcing our entrance, and a matronly woman in a hooded white robe emerges from the back of the shop. She greets us with a smile as she settles behind the counter.
"Ah, Lady Diana," she says. "So nice to see you. And I see you bring guests?"
"Customers," she says.
They seek celestial scrolls, or ninjutsu, I pipe up. The woman smiles at me.
I'm not sure I have any of those, but I can show you what I do have. Please, take a look.
She opens a book, and when I focus on it, a list emerges on my HUD. Level 5. Create light. 20 gold. Level 5. Create food. 20 gold. Level 15. Protection. 20 gold. Level 35. Great cure. 50 gold. Level 45. Major favor of the goddess. 50 gold. Level 55. Haste. 200 gold. Level 65. Great heal 4. 100 gold. Level 75. Teleport. 150 gold. Level 80. Heal 5. 150 gold.
Wow, these are expensive,
Gilly says, her eyes lighting up with her own HUD as she studies the book. I wonder if I'd gotten ripped off by Blacktop by selling that armor and whip for only 7 gold. Then I remember something. Do you buy scrolls as well?
Yes, of course, the shopkeeper says. Do you have some?
Give her the chest, Gilly.
What chest?
The one with all the scrolls from Blacktop.
Oh, right,
she says, suddenly remembering. Gilly materializes it from her inventory and passes it to the old woman, who rummages through them for a bit.
Some of these are quite good, she says. Are you certain you don't wish to keep them?
Which ones? I ask. The woman shows me. Level 75, Chaos Storm, 185 gold. Level 85, Comet Strike, 350 gold. I whistle at the prices.
I guess if you ever want to level Elemental Mage, they'll come in handy, Gilly.
Nah, Gilly says. We'll trade them for gold to buy all the other scrolls.
Gilly then begins haggling with the woman over the prices. As it draws on, I get an idea.
Hey, Gilly, you think you'll be okay here alone for a minute?
She looks at me, perplexed, but then shrugs.
Sure, I guess. I saw something back in the markets I wanted to get.
I then look to Lady Diana.
That's okay, right?
The cop lady gives a sigh, but nods.
She should be fine here. Where do you need to go?
It's not too far away, I say. Be right back, Gilly.
Diana and I leave the magic's shop, and I trace my path back to the vendor with the mage gear. The guy manning the stall is tall and thin, with a pencil mustache, and looks vaguely annoyed when I show up.
Sorry, I say. I know you're probably getting ready to close, but I was interested in that outfit over there. How much would it be for all 3 pieces?
The vendor considers it a moment.
7 for the hat, 10 for the coat, and 5 for the leggings.
As he tells me the prices, they light up next to the items on my HUD.
White witch's hat, plus 15 intelligence, plus 15 mind, plus 20 TP, 7 gold. White witch's coat, minus 10% casting speed, plus 150 TP, 10 gold. White witch's leggings, plus 15 intelligence, plus 15 mind, plus 50 TP, 5 gold.
Wow, I say to Diana. You weren't kidding about those scrolls being expensive. This stuff is peanuts in comparison.
Diana looks at me funny.
You're going to buy that?
Yeah, I say. For Gilly. As cheap as it is compared to the scrolls, I don't have much gold on me. I do have a bunch of spears and stuff from clearing out the goblins, though. The total comes to 15 spears and 3 rapiers, all in fair condition. The best I picked out from the lot. I show them to the vendor.
Would you be willing to buy these in exchange?
Your barter increases by 0.3.
I'll give you 10 gold for the lot. Come on, you can probably sell this stuff for at least 3 gold apiece, can't you?
The vendor wobbles his head.
Okay, 15. Your barter increases by 0.3. Skill up. Your barter skill is now 2.
Nice.
But still not enough for the full set.
How about I throw in a little something extra to trade you for all 3 pieces?
Extra?
It's not weapons, but it is something kind of rare.
I materialize a piece of the buffalo meat and show it to the merchant.
How much would you give me for this stuff?
The vendor wrinkles his nose as he looks it over.
That's definitely not worth even a gold to me.
Darn. But I can't give up yet.
You do realize this isn't just any buffalo meat, right?
The merchant's eyes squint with curiosity.
Eh?
This is from the herd of the legendary Lakota. Best buffalo meat in the world. I'm in a pinch right now, so I'm willing to offload it for cheap, but I'm sure you could sell this to a chef for a lot more than a gold, maybe even five. And if not, I promise you it will be one of the best meals you've ever eaten. Your barter increases by 0.4.
Well, how much do you want for it?
I check how much more I need for the gear.
I'll give you 3 pieces, plus all the weapons for the trade.
He mulls it over.
4 pieces of meat.
Your barter increases by 0.7. Skill up. Your barter skill is now 3.
Deal, I say, and materialize the other 3 pieces of meat for him to complete the trade. He then gives me the mage outfit, which I store within my inventory.
Pleasure doing business, I say with a smile and shake his hand.
I think I could get used to this bartering stuff. It's actually kind of fun.
As we head back to the magic's shop, Diana gives me a nod.
Nice trade you worked out there. You don't look like much of a haggler, but I think you made off with a better deal.
I grin.
Thanks. You bought those for your friend?
Yeah, I wanted to surprise her with it. That's why I wanted to come alone.
For the first time, I see the cop lady actually smile.
That's very thoughtful of you.
It actually makes me blush a little.
Well, she's worth it. She's done a lot for me.
What is this Lakota you were speaking of?
As we walk back to the magic shop, I tell Diana about my fight with the LM and actually get her to smile some more. I think she's somewhat impressed, even though all she does is give me little more than a few nods of approval. When we enter the shop, I hear Gilly still going at it with the shop owner, but when she sees me, she releases an exasperated sigh.
Good, you're back. I can't afford this last one, Reese.
Which one?
This one.
Level 55. Haste. 200 gold. Haste. Increases attack speed and decreases recast and ability cooldowns.
Wow. I wonder if that could stack with my Shadow Haste spell.
Probably not, but it would be awesome to buff everyone else with it. I check to see if I have anything else for trade, but I don't have much more to give up. Not with us still having to make the journey north.
Then I think back to the admin screen from the town. I did recall it had an exchange for turning nano into gold. I wonder if it has value here as well.
Time to try out my bartering skills again. I open my hand and produce a nano shard.
Do you trade in these?
The woman catches her breath.
Oh my, you're shard warriors.
Gilly and I share a glance.
Yeah, I guess, I say. We are from the shards.
The woman looks at the crystals in my palm.
I've never seen mana crystals manifested in such a manner before. This is a special day for me indeed.
I didn't consider that what we could do was probably considered the equivalent of superpowers here.
Mana crystals?
Gilly asks.
Yes, the crystals of the life essence. Only shard warriors possess the ability to harness them in such a manner, but there are mages who can use them.
I would trade you the scroll for that crystal.
Your barter increases by 0.3.
I pause for a minute when I realize that I've got about 10 million credits worth of nano in my hand. The number makes me remember my sick mother back in Citadel and how much 10 million credits would do for her. My spirits sink a bit. Still, this shard wasn't that hard to come by, and unless we get it back to Citadel, it won't matter how many of them I have. Having a spell like that will certainly increase our chances of getting back. Still, it seems like a lot to trade for just one scroll.
Throw in 200 gold, and you got a deal.
The woman balks at the surprise counteroffer. I slowly twirl the shard in my fingers, enticing her with it, until, finally, her desire for it gets the best of her.
Okay, I'll take it for that,
she says.
Jackpot.
Your barter increases by 0.7. Skill up. Your barter skill is now 4.
We make the exchange, and Gilly gets her last scroll. We split the gold between us.
Shall we go?
Diana says.
We leave the establishment and head toward the palace. I'll show you to the baths, Diana says. The king has graciously provided you with more
appropriate clothing to attend the banquet in.
The way she paused before saying appropriate makes me consider my now grimy, sweat-stained ninja outfit in a new light. I figure a bath will be as much a relief to us as the people enduring our company.
Is there a place where we can wash our clothes, too?
Gilly laughs.
I was just going to ask that.
I'll see to it, Diana says.
Please, this way.
We leave the bazaar and head for the royal palace in the center of the city. Diana points out various landmarks as we pass by. The place is huge, at least twice as big as Swifttide, I think. There's a large cathedral guarded by knights, with celestial mages moving in and out. Next, she shows us the main keep and the barracks where the army trains. Even this late in the day, I see lots of guys in chainmail performing drills with swords and spears. I have an urge to ask her how many men they have, but I don't want her thinking I'm some sort of spy seeking military info, so I keep my mouth shut. Finally, we pass a large coliseum that's made of granite, with columns at least a couple stories high.
How long did it take to build all this?
I ask, thinking about Brook Run and how much it would take to transform the village into something like this.
Not long once the king arrived. You shard warriors have a way of accelerating things. I've seen this city grow tenfold in less than a year under King Braxis's reign.
How long have you lived here? Gilly asks.
All my life, Diana says.
This gets me curious. Val Helena did mention she'd seen children, but do the AIs actually have kids and stuff?
So you were born here? Like your parents are still here?
Yes, I was born here, Diana says. As for my parents, however, they have long since passed on to the next world.
Wow. So maybe they do have kids.
I'm sorry to hear that, Gilly says.
Diana adds a small frown to her already dour face.
This place was not always so peaceful.
She says nothing more, however. And after a few more minutes of walking, we finally arrive at the palace. I've never seen one before, but the building in front of me lives up to my imagination. Ornate, domed roofs rest atop walls of white marble. Leading to the front gates is a lawn of well-manicured grass, cut through by a red-tiled walkway lined with tall fir trees. More city guards are posted at the entrance to the walkway, and while they stiffen when they see us, it seems more a sign of respect to Diana than an alarm due to us. When we get inside the palace doors, I see that the interior is even more lavish than the outside. Everything is made of fine marbled tile, and what has to be some sort of light spell illuminates the interior better than LEDs ever could. That reminds me of something.
Me.
Hey, you did get that light spell, didn't you, Gilly?
Gilly.
That's what you're thinking about right now? Look at this place, dude!
Her response makes me chuckle.
An elderly woman in a simple gown and apron appears from a side corridor and greets us.
Ah, you must be the remainder of the king's guests.
I smile.
I guess so.
Thank you, Lady Diana, the old woman says. I shall take them from here.
It was nice to meet you, Rhys, Diana says. And you as well, Gilly.
It was nice meeting you too, Lady Diana, I say as we shake hands.
She gives me a rare smile and seems to hold my hand a bit longer than is necessary. She squints her eyes at me again. And though she's smiling, they seem to have a touch of sadness to them. She looks like she wants to say something else, but then she must change her mind, because she breaks eye contact and looks down at the ground.
I'll see you both at the banquet, she says, still not looking up.
Goodbye.
And with that, she spins on her heel and leaves us in the palace.
Chapter 21. Bath Time.
I'll show you to your rooms, the elderly woman says. They are next to the baths. The rest of your companions have already arrived.
Gilly and I head down a few more corridors and then come to one that's lined with doors, much like a hotel. I've never actually stayed at a hotel, but I've seen them in my movies. The doors are all on one side of the hall, and the corridor takes a turn at the far end.
The men's quarters are here, the woman says. The corridor leads to the baths. The baths are shared but separated by a partition.
She then points to one of the doors.
This room is yours, young sir. Please place your soiled clothes in the basket, and I will have them laundered immediately. You will also find a change of clothes for the banquet, as well as a place to store your valuables, if you wish.
I've never had five-star treatment like this before. Wow, thank you.
I'll show your companion to her own room now.
She turns to Gilly.
If you'll follow me, young miss.
Guess no snuggling tonight. I wonder if my brother had anything to do with these sleeping arrangements. I'll see you at the baths then, Gilly.
You won't be seeing anyone, young sir, the old woman snaps. Such would be inappropriate. But you may converse through the partition.
Yikes. Talk about matron control. Okay, understood. Thank you, ma'am. The old woman gives me a suspicious eye before leading Gilly away. Gilly.
See you in a few.
Gilly.
Not.
I can only smile as Gilly gives me a cute little wink while tipping her witch's hat. Seeing the hat reminds me of something. Oh, dang, her present. Gilly! I rush back down the corridor, once again sparking the ire of the old woman. I give her an apologetic smile as I make a quick trade with Gilly. Sorry, but you'll probably appreciate it. You might not need to wash her clothes after this.
Huh?
Gilly says. You request a trade with Gilly. You offer White Witch's Hat, plus 15 intelligence, plus 15 mind, plus 20 TP. White Witch's Coat, minus 10% casting speed, plus 150 TP. White Witch's Leggings, plus 15 intelligence, plus 15 mind, plus 50 TP. Gilly's big green eyes go wide.
Is this for me?
When I saw it, I just knew I had to get it for you. You look too darn cute in that witch's hat, so I bought you the upgrade. She giggles and gives me a great big hug. Out of the corner of my vision, I see the old woman give an oy vey expression. That causes me to laugh, too.
Thanks, Reese. You're the best boyfriend ever.
Gilly ends our hug with a kiss, and I sheepishly let her go when the matron woman mutters something under her breath. Okay, see you. I give a final wave goodbye, and then head for my own room. When I open the door, I feel like I've just won the lottery. Inside, tiled flooring is made warm by a plush fur rug. Sitting on top of it is a four-poster bed made of solid teak and fitted with a mattress made of more furs. I close the door and jump onto the bed like I'm 6 years old. I land, feel the give of the material beneath me, and release an involuntary sigh. Man, I could really get used to this. I'm so tired from the past 3 nights in the wilderness that I almost feel like crashing. But a nice hot bath sounds like a winner right now. I check out the rest of the room. On a small bureau next to the bed, I find a wool linen robe, as well as a neatly folded green tunic and matching pants. There are some leather sandals as well. The basket for my dirty clothes is on the floor. I strip down and feel relieved to be free of my ninja outfit. Only then do I notice a small chest that opens with a lock and key. Stowing my weapons, I lock it, then drop the key into my robe pocket once I get it on. I hear a faint goddess laugh come from behind the wall. Your awareness increases by 0.4. Skill up. Your awareness is now 40. Val? I hold my breath to see if I was hearing things, but I don't hear it again. Could she be next door? I exit my room and knock gently on the door to the adjacent room. Val, is that you? A flurry of commotion comes from inside, and about a minute later, the door swings inward to reveal Maxis standing there. Yo, what's up? About time you got here. He's dressed in a robe and has a bead of sweat on his brow. What the heck? You okay? I ask when I see him breathing heavy. I thought I heard Valhelena in there. What? He says, bunching his eyebrows together, clearly attempting to look confused. She's on the other side, man. Come on, I was waiting for you to get here. Let's go hit the baths. I smell like a billy goat. Okay. I try to get a peek behind him into his room, but he quickly closes the door and pushes me down the corridor. Let's go, let's go. You smell like one too. Okay, Mike's acting weird, and I'm pretty sure I heard Valhelena's laugh. But I don't push it. As we walk down the hall, I try not to think about what I might have just interrupted in there.
and honestly, I don't know whether to puke or laugh. All I know is, I can't wait to tell Gilly. Mike and I enter the baths, and it instantly feels like I'm in a spa or something. Marble tile is everywhere, and the constant splash of an unseen waterfall fills the air with a gentle hiss. The air itself is warm, and wisps of steam rise from the surface of the pool-sized tub where Rembrandt's already soaking, neck deep in the water.
"Oi! About time you got here, Max," Rembrandt says. "Where you been, mate?"
Maxis jerks his thumb toward me.
"Was waiting for this slowpoke to show up."
Yeah, right. I wonder if he and Val didn't make a beeline straight for the baths as soon as we split up. Still, I'm not going to let him get away with that slowpoke remark.
"Slowpoke?" I say. "Race you to the tub, old dude."
Mike flashes me a competitive grin, and we both disrobe and sprint for the bath.
"Hey, no running! That's bloody dangerous!"
We pay Rembrandt no mind as we dive into the warm water feet first. We hit with a combined splash that sends a wave up and out of the pool. I honestly can't tell who won, but I claim the victory anyway.
"Beat you? No, you didn't."
Maxis splashes me with another wave. Rembrandt shakes his head at us.
"Something's wrong with you two."
"Hey!"
I hear Gilly's voice from behind the partition that's running down the center of the pool.
"You guys wet up the floor on this side, too."
I laugh.
"Sorry, babe."
The warm water feels amazing. It's a translucent blue in color and effervesces with tingly bubbles. It also seems to have some kind of mineral that works like soap. I scrub myself and feel the dirt and grime strip away. Val Helena then enters the baths on the women's side, dressed in nothing but a towel. She's smiling like I've never seen before, practically glowing from the inside. We can all see her since she's so tall, and tall enough to look right over the partition, too, which she does with a mischievous grin.
"Hey!"
I shout in protest, covering myself.
"Oi, no fair, Val!"
Rembrandt joins me. Maxis, however, just grins back at her with a wink.
"No peeking,"
she says coyly in her sultry voice. She lets out a goddess laugh and turns her back to the partition, removing her towel. I get a full view of her chiseled back and a glimpse of side boob from behind. I can't help but feel a bit embarrassed at the reaction it causes. Val Helena is sort of like a big sister, or even a second mom to me, but still, she's one heck of a hot lady. An elbow from Maxis breaks me out of my trance.
"Eyes to yourself, bro."
Eesh. I redden a bit as Val Helena disappears behind the partition, and another wave of water comes shooting out from under it.
"Hey!"
Rembrandt says.
"You could have at least given us a tsunami warning or something, love."
Gilly laughs through the partition.
"That's called payback."
We all have a good laugh then. We settle into relaxed conversation as we all de-stress. I can't think of when I've ever experienced anything like this before. I send some PMs to Gilly to tell her about my suspicions regarding Val and Max. It gets the reaction I figured it would. Gilly:
"Ew, gross."
After a while, she sends me back another one. Gilly:
"Hey, do you find me attractive?"
Whoa. Where's this coming from? Me: "Huh? Of course I do." Gilly:
"Are you sure?"
Now I'm really confused. Me:
"What makes you think I don't?"
Gilly:
"Well, because Val is all like, boobs, and I'm more like, boobs. I just need to know if, well, you know."
What the heck?
My mind is so blown away by her mention of boobs that I almost forget to answer her. I also fear that she somehow figured out I was staring at Val Helena just now. I hadn't given any thought to how Gilly might feel comparing herself to Val, but I guess seeing her naked over there might make any young girl feel kind of inadequate. I try to think of the best way to answer her. Me: "Gilly, you're perfect the way you are, and I wouldn't have you any other way." Gilly:
"You really mean it?"
Me:
"Of course. Plus, Val is a giant. What do you expect?"
I hear Gilly laugh from behind the partition. Gilly:
"Thanks, Reese. You're the best.
A bell sounds behind me, and I turn to see the fat guy, Xavier, standing there with the two male knights, Thomas and Siegfried. He gives a little bow, concealing the small bell within the sleeve of his robes.
So sorry to disturb you,
he says, loud enough for the girls to hear on the other side.
But the banquet will commence in a half hour, and I must insist that you do not be late for the king's arrival.
Guess that means bath time's over, mates, Rembrandt says.
Thanks, I say to Xavier. We'll go get ready.
Siegfried and Thomas will escort you when ready, he says. And do remember to wear your provided attire. The king is very particular about appearances.
With that, he gives another bow, and the trio leaves the baths. So, I say, any thoughts on how we should approach this King Braxis guy? Just let me handle the talking, Maxis says. I got it covered. I wait to see if Val Helena is going to say anything about that, but she doesn't. Part of me wonders if what I interrupted this afternoon has anything to do with her newfound silence. Okay, bro, I say to him. I guess we're in your hands. Chapter 22 King Braxis. When I get back to my room, I find my dirty clothes have already been removed. Guess that old lady doesn't mess around when it comes to laundry. I check out my new duds next. Royal Emerald Tunic. Only the finest silk was used to make this garment fit for royalty. Royal Emerald Slacks. Only the finest silk was used to make this garment fit for royalty. Royal Emerald Slippers. Only the finest leather was used to make this garment fit for royalty. Looks like regular clothing. No stats at all. The tunic and slacks fit snugly and adjust to my size as soon as I put them on. I can't say it looks flattering on me, as in, it's not something I'd wear to look good in the real world, but for a fantasy realm, I think it's pretty top shelf. Plus, they're comfortable. I put on the sandals and am about to leave the room when I glimpse the storage chest. Something goes off in the back of my mind, and I have a dark premonition that I'll not be finding my weapons in there when I go to look inside. I'm probably just being paranoid again, though. If this King Braxis was truly going to do something bad to us, surely he would have had no better opportunity than when we were all naked in the baths just now. Still, I grab my key from my robe and unlock the chest, half expecting to see it empty. My two dark steel kunai are still safely inside. I feel a little silly then, and nearly close it back up again, but instead, I take them out. I don't think it'll look kosher to head to the banquet with these on my hips, but I don't want to leave them behind either. Just in case, I could store them in my inventory, I suppose. I'd have to spend more nano to recreate them again, but I've got more nano than I know what to do with right now. The blades turn to dust as I store them, joining the two level 85 weapons that Blacktop gave me. If this king dude is going to try to pull something, at least I'll be armed. I have half a mind to share my thoughts with the others, but somehow I don't get the vibe that everyone else is feeling the same way. Blacktop said Braxis was a prick, but my brother seems to think otherwise. And if Mike is right, I don't want to be the one overreacting like some dweeb and messing things up. A growl from my stomach sets my thoughts on far simpler issues. It's dinner time. Maxis, Rembrandt, and I follow behind Siegfried as he leads us up a flight of stairs toward the dining hall. We're all dressed in our princely gear, as I've decided to call it, emerald green with gold trim. The same rules for fashion must not apply to the staff, because Siegfried is still in his full plate armor. When we enter the dining room, I see Gilly dressed like I've never seen her before. She's wearing emerald and gold too, but in a flowing, strapless dress that has her looking like a princess. Under the light of the crystal chandeliers, she looks stunning, her short hair brushed and styled, but still covering her pointed ears. Dang, I didn't even think to do something with my hair. I hope I don't look too scruffy. She's seated at the huge dining table, along with Val Helena, who looks equally gorgeous in her giant version of the same dress. One glance at Maxis, and I can see he's drooling over her already. The room has a ceiling that's two stories high, and large windows that reveal the night sky beyond.
The equally large table could easily seat 30 people, and is center stage for the affair, dressed with silverware and wine glasses. I have a mild panic attack when I see all the different forms of cutlery. I've only ever eaten with a simple fork or spoon. It makes me think back to my dinner date with Gilly and her parents. Boy, I sure hope I didn't make a fool of myself too badly back then. One look at all those forks and knives, and I just know I won't know which one to use. Of course, my brother probably won't either, but neither would he care. Standing against the wall of the dining room, away from the table, is Lady Diana. I try to wave to her, but she's staring straight ahead, standing at attention. Next to her is the other Praetorian guard, Thomas, standing much the same way. When we reach the table, Siegfried shows us to our respective seats, and then becomes a wallflower as well, taking a spot next to Diana. "You look great," I say to Gilly as I take a seat next to her. She gives me a great big smile that makes her look even more radiant.
"You look good, too."
"Yes, very handsome," Valhelena comments from across the table. "How about me?" Maxis says, plopping down next to Valhelena. The half-giant goddess gives him a playful grin. "Not as good as your brother, but you'll pass." "What?" he says with mock protest. "I'm way better looking than him." "As if," I say. "Oi, no fighting at the dinner table, you two." Rembrandt gives Mike and me a preemptive warning as he takes a seat next to me. "At least you didn't try to have a race to your seats." We all get a chuckle out of that. A bell chimes, and the chief executive, Xavier, steps into the dining room.
"All rise for His Royal Majesty, King Braxis."
It almost feels like a joke to be standing for just some other dude from the Shards, but the pomp and circumstance seems to demand it. As we stand, the king walks in. He's nothing like what I expect him to look like, especially with a name like Braxis. He looks barely older than I am, and has one side of his blonde head shaved. The other side he's grown long, down to his shoulder. He's not overly tall. He looks spindly, in fact, and his back is kind of hunched. If I were to guess, this dude looks like he's a 100% accurate scan of his true self or something. An average face, average height. Only his clothes, which are comprised of a ridiculous-looking red robe with leopard fur trim, give the impression of someone important. To me, however, he looks more like a nerd who dressed up as a pimp for Halloween.
"Hey, what's up, you guys?"
he says casually as he takes a seat at the head of the table.
"Oh, go on and sit. Xavier's always overdoing it with the protocol."
"Apologies, my lord."
Xavier gives a short head bow.
"See?"
He grins, and we respond with a polite round of chuckles.
"I don't know what you guys like to eat, but I'm sure you've never had Severian lobster before."
Valhelena smiles.
"I may have had it once or twice."
Braxis smiles and points a finger at her.
"Ah, right. You're the one who's been here before, aren't you? I recognize your name."
"I was here for a little while, yes."
"Well, even so, you won't have experienced anything like this before. Fresh as you can get. I made a saltwater pool just to keep them handy for special occasions."
He snaps his fingers and serving women appear, bringing in platters of bright red crustaceans.
"If you're allergic to shellfish, then you picked the wrong dissad."
That gets some more laughs, and I feel myself easing up a bit. This guy doesn't seem so bad. I wonder if I was overreacting after all.
"One rule," he says. "No small talk on an empty stomach. So dig in."
He leads by example, grabbing a whole lobster and unceremoniously snapping off the tail.
"Music!"
Elegant dining music begins to play from somewhere unseen. It must be magical in nature, because it sounds like it's coming from the chandelier.
"Nice sound system," I say.
"Thanks. You guys drink?"
He snaps his fingers again, and more serving women come in with crystal decanters filled with red wine.
"Not the youngsters,"
Maxis says, much to my chagrin, pointing to me and Gilly.
"Bring them anything they want,"
Braxis tells the women, and they do just that, serving us fruit juice when Gilly and I ask for it. We eat for a bit in silence then, and I have to admit, I've never tasted anything quite so delicious. The lobster meat is firm and sweet, and when dipped in the hot salty butter, it creates a symphony in my mouth.
"This is amazing,"
I whisper to Gilly. She nods with her mouth full while cracking open a lobster leg.
So, Raxus says, pointing a half-eaten lobster claw at my brother. I've seen your name before, too. Top of the game in PvP, right?
He shrugs, but more to look cool than nonchalant.
I suppose. And what about you two?
He asks, looking to Gilly and me.
What's your claim to fame?
First time here, I say. Still getting used to the place, really. Gilly elbows me.
He's being modest. Reese here is a Dodge tank.
Oh? He says, looking nonplussed. Not sure what that means, but good for you.
Yeah, I say, feeling a bit embarrassed that Gilly even mentioned it now.
Thanks. And congrats on getting here, he continues.
Crazy transition, right?
Wouldn't trade that experience for anything, though. Granted, my first 30 seconds here nearly turned out to be my last, but thank goodness for quick thinking. Seriously, coming here was the best decision I've made in my life. I feel sorry for all the poor suckers who said no when given the choice.
I think back to my own decision to travel to the surface not so many days ago. It had been a hard one, torn between my loyalty to Val and saving my mom and brother. Turns out I made the right choice in the end, but it wasn't easy taking that leap of faith. I had good people to do it with me, though.
I give Gilly a smile. She returns it, oblivious to just how appreciative I am of her making this journey with me.
So, which shard are you from? Gilly asks.
Era of Empire.
I don't think I've even heard of that game.
What genre is it?
Strategy. Turn-based.
I focus on him to check his character. Name, Raxus. Race, human. Class, ruler. Level, 85. Guild, Era of Empire.
Dang, your class is called ruler? I say. He shrugs.
Don't let that impress you too much. It's the default the game slots you into when you enter a combat shard.
There's no combat in that game?
He shakes his head. Not up close and personal like you're probably all used to. Hats off to you guys who can beat a world boss on the combat shards. Especially Nazgar. That place spawns the hardest bosses, you know? Put me in that kind of situation, and I'd probably crap myself.
He laughs, and we all laugh good-naturedly with him. I'm not sure how to feel about Braxis now. I had assumed he would be some hot-headed asshat from his name and Blacktop's opinion of him, but this guy seems okay. Plus, he must be some kind of master tactician or something. It's no wonder he was able to take over and expand the city so easily, and single-handedly, it looks like.
So what brings you guys to my neck of the woods? He says.
Maxis shares a quick glance with Val Helena, perhaps PMing her for confirmation that he'd be the one to speak, and then clears his throat.
Two things, he says, and one I'm hoping you can maybe help us with.
Oh? Raxus leans back in his chair, folding his arms.
Do tell.
First, we need to head to the Vale of Sorrows, Maxus says. Got a friend trapped in the maze up there. And second, we need a way to find Citadel.
Citadel?
The place we all come from. Our city.
Finding where it's physically located is what I'm hoping you can maybe help with.
Raxus scrunches his face up like he smelled something bad.
Why would you want to find where we're from?
Maxus gives him the rundown of the situation back home. The nano shortage, and what will happen to everyone in 6 months if we don't replenish the stocks in time. I expect to see more of a reaction from him, but Braxis simply nods and says,
Yeah, sounds like a problem.
Yeah, Maxus says. A big one.
You think you could help?
He shrugs. Don't see a lot of value in it for me, so probably not. The table goes quiet. Finally, Rembrandt speaks.
You do understand that we'll all die unless we accomplish this, yeah?
Raxus chuckles.
You mean our bodies will die? And trust me, they can send that old thing to the vats for all I care. I've transcended. This is the new world, and I'm king here now.
The way he declares himself king makes my stomach a little uneasy.
It doesn't work like that, Val Helena says. If your body dies back there, then you'll become a shard wraith.
He breaks into a laugh. Yeah, I've heard the stories. I think they're bogus.
Probably started by weak-minded idiots who couldn't hack it out here. It's a way to keep people running back to the shards. Well, not me. I'm here to stay, baby. Forever.
What about the rest of the people? I say. There's like a million people back home. You don't care if they all die?
Braxis shrugs nonchalantly as he nibbles on a lobster claw. All gotta die sometime. My face flushes, hot with agitation. What's wrong with this guy?
Don't you have family or something? My mother is back there, dying.
Look, not my problem. He cuts me off. I fume inwardly. I feel like punching him in the face. But I restrain myself and send a PM to Gilly instead. Me. Man, this guy is a real jerk.
Gilly. Tell me about it. Guess your big bro called it wrong.
I look over at Maxis. He looks equally miffed by Braxis's response. We make eye contact, and Mike gives me a confused little shrug, almost as if to say, don't ask me.
Okay, so here's the deal, Braxis says. Time to talk about why you're really here.
We all furrow our brows at that, looking at one another.
What are you talking about? Gilly says. We just told you why we're here.
No, you told me what you want to accomplish. I'm going to tell you why you're here, right now, having dinner with me.
Okay. What the heck is this?
Not to put too fine a point on it, but there is a reason I invited you all to dinner, Braxis says. Two reasons, actually. One was to get to know you a bit, which was fun, I admit. But more importantly, I needed to confirm something.
Which you have.
Confirm what? I said. That your teammate wasn't lying.
What?
I've got a little surprise for you. I tense. Not knowing what to expect, but I don't feel my awareness skill going off.
Get in here,
Braxis says with a sharp snap of his fingers. A slender elf woman walks into the room from behind us, wearing the same emerald and gold dress as Gilly and Val Helena. She has deep blue hair with sharp bangs, slender features, and a pair of violet-tinted eyes. My own eyes widen when I see her, but it's Val Helena who speaks first.
Iko?
She doesn't respond to her name as she walks past and casually sits herself in Braxis's lap. Her violet eyes stare back at us, but seem transfixed, as if she's in some sort of a trance. She wraps her arms around Braxis's shoulders and just keeps staring at us, saying nothing.
What the heck?
Val Helena launches to her feet, shouting in her big booming voice.
What is this? What have you done to her?
King Braxis recoils, and the three knights take a step forward.
Have a seat, Braxis shouts, or I will make you.
Like heck you will. You tell me what you've...
Sit, Xavier says, and Val Helena drops back into her chair. Holy crap. My heart rate doubles as my stomach knots with tension. I've got to figure out what the heck just happened. I look to Maxis, but he looks ready to perform a flying kick across the table.
In fact, Braxis says, I think you should all just relax.
As soon as he says it, the tension leaves my body and I feel numb. What's happening to me? I share a look with Gilly and can see the fear in her big green eyes.
Rhys?
Sorry, Braxis says. A little magic trick of mine. I had some special clothing made for honored guests from the Shards.
Comfy, right? Let's just say that while you're wearing them, you will be very receptive to my commands.
He flexes his fingers, and I notice a huge emerald ring on his right hand. I look to Xavier and see he is wearing one as well.
Your awareness increases by 0.2.
Great. Wish that skill would have kicked in a little bit sooner. And here I was worried about my stupid weapons. The stuff's cursed, too, so you can't remove it. Not without my say-so.
Why are you doing this?
Val Helena demands, her gray eyes piercing like daggers.
Now hold on. Braxis raises his hands defensively. I'm actually the victim here. This is for my protection.
Protection from what? Gilly says.
We haven't done anything to you.
Oh, but you will, he says. You think I don't know about those quests you two ladies are holding? Oh, geez.
This isn't going to be good.
Look, mate, Rembrandt says, if we wanted to bloody attack you, we would have bloody well done so already. So stop with the bollocks.
Praxis smirks.
I don't understand half of what you just said, mate. But the reason you didn't attack me is because you couldn't. I don't fall for the same trick twice.
Same trick? Val Helena says. What are you talking about?
Your friend here came to me with the exact same story about needing passage through the North Gate to get to the Vale. So I invite her in, show her hospitality, even offer to help. And what does she do in return?
He shakes his head. Tries to put a knife in my back. Literally. I see Val Helena go from being angry to releasing an exasperated sigh, leveling her eyes at the zombified Iko, angry at her now.
You've got to be kidding me.
It's true, Lady Diana says from behind us. She attacked with no provocation. I feel myself sighing along with Val Helena.
What the heck was she thinking?
No provocation, but plenty of motivation, Praxis says, stroking Iko's cheek. Or so I found out, once I saw that quest she had. Nearly succeeded, too. Killed the head of my Praetorian guard and his lieutenant. It was only thanks to Xavier's enchantment here that I was able to stop her before she killed me. So, you can forgive me if I take some added precautions when her friends suddenly show up 2 days later to either rescue her or finish the job. So, which one is it?
Holy crap. This can't be happening.
I just told you what we're here for, Maxis says with a growl. We've got nothing to do with her. Praxis scoffs.
I'm finding that a little hard to believe.
So, this is what you've done to her now?
Gilly says, looking at Iko, horrified.
Turned her into some kind of puppet? She's a person. You can't do this.
Hey, my city, my rules, he says. And I think the normal punishment for regicide is death, so she's getting off lightly in my book. He then smiles at Iko. She smiles vacantly back at him. Besides, this is probably nothing she wouldn't normally do anyway. Same for you two girls, I'm sure, given the opportunity. He gives them a nasty leer that sends sickness coursing through my stomach. Maxis's knuckles crack as he clenches his fists atop the table.
Dude. I'm going to freaking bury you.
And there we have it, Praxis says with a smirk. Proof of what you really came here to do. Guess I was right.
You're wrong,
Rembrandt says, shaking his head.
This has gone far enough, mate. Drop this already.
Hey, I'll be the one to decide when this is over, Praxis says. Look, this is nothing personal, but I simply can't trust you guys not to try to fulfill that quest. You've had a taste of the good life. I'm sure you wouldn't mind having it permanently.
Red-hot anger swells within my heart.
We don't want any of this. We're here to save our friends, to save Citadel. We don't care about your stupid city.
Whatever, Praxis says. You say that now, but what about a week from now? A month? A year? I can't keep looking over my shoulder for that long.
What do you intend to do?
Val Helena says, surprisingly calm. He shrugs. What a king always does. Let the help do the work.
What the heck?
But hey, I'm all for giving you a fair shot. You'll get your chance to flex your muscles, just not against me. And hey, if you win, you might get to fight another day.
What is he talking about?
You're going to make us fight in that Colosseum, Gilly says. Aren't you?
Praxis just shrugs, like it's not his decision or something.
Hey, it is what it is.
Blacktop was right. This guy really is a prick. Still, I've got to try to reason with him somehow. No way can we get thrown into that Colosseum under his full control. I've got to think. Get inside his head. He's a gamer too, but not exactly like us. He's a chair jockey, a strategist, a town builder. As such, he must see some value in making deals for the long term.
Look, there's no need for this, I say, still not knowing quite where I'm going yet. You help us, we help you. That's how things are supposed to work, right?
Nah, I already tried that with this one. He jerks his head toward Iko.
Nearly got me assassinated. One thing I learned for sure, the most dangerous things out here are not the monsters.